Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. The Canada Foundation for Innovation is celebrating its 10th anniversary by holding events across the country. One of the first was held at the Institute for Biocomplexity and Informatics at the University of Calgary. On hand to give congratulatory remarks were researchers who simply wouldn't be doing what they're doing today if their labs hadn't received grants for equipment from the Canada Foundation for Innovation. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. Innovation is the big watchword for the scientific community in the 21st century. But making a mark in this highly competitive world takes more than brilliant minds. Money and resources are key. That's where the Canada Foundation for Innovation comes in. CFI is an organization that provides the all-important grants to buy equipment and build laboratories. This year, the Canada Foundation for Innovation celebrates its 10th anniversary, and one of the first anniversary events was held recently at the University of Calgary. Suzanne Corbet is the CFI's Vice President of External Relations and Communications.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here because the University of Calgary has invited us to help celebrate our 10th anniversary. The CFI was created back in 1997 to fund research infrastructure, and after 10 years, I think we're beginning to see the fruits of those investments, and so we thought it was an apt time to have an anniversary and a celebration. And there's a lot happening at the University of Calgary that demonstrates the kind of objectives that CFI was created to achieve, and so it's a real win-win and a celebration. Today.
Can you give me an example of how the University of Calgary has made use of CFI funding?
Well, I think today's been wonderful because we've had an opportunity to tour a couple of labs that are great indications of it. We were able to visit with the WestGrid. WestGrid, although began outside of the context of CFI, in order for it to evolve as a high-performance computing grid that serves a population of researchers in Canada, it is a great example of infrastructure, which is what CFI funds, and we were able to provide them with some funding to build that grid initially to serve Western Canada. The evolution of that has brought about something called Compute Canada that is seven grids across Canada that are now empowered with a recent $60 million investment of additional infrastructure to that grid to provide high-performance computing in Canada. So, I mean, that's one example that's very powerful, and there are many. We've supported 184 projects worth over $109 million CFI funds. Now, if you think that we fund 40%, they've leveraged almost $300 million in research infrastructure since we've been created in 1998.
And that's just one institution. When you think of all the universities across Canada, what does that total up to?
Our total investment to date is just over $3 billion in commitments, and it has leveraged almost $11 billion in research infrastructure in 10 years. Now, you know, this is not about CFI alone. We're a bit of a catalyst. Given that we fund infrastructure, let's face it, nothing happens if you just put a piece of equipment in a room. But that, in turn, has allowed the universities to attract very, very good researchers, excellent researchers, leaders in the world in their field, helped us retain some of the best students from everywhere in the world and within Canada, and provided an excellent training environment for students at all levels within the institution. A concrete example of that is one of the young researchers who was showing us a lab earlier today in the genetic research was basically saying he was an undergraduate student that was being allowed to work with the PhD students on some of these experiments. 10 years ago, that would be unheard of, to have students at a young part of their academic career experience such high-profile equipment, and in turn it is creating leading-edge and world-class researchers in Canada.
When you go back 10 years, what was the problem you were trying to address at that time?
the 90s are the dark ages of research, the late 80s and early 90s, and if you talk to researchers, they'll confirm to you that Canada's resources to support research had really been depleted. There were little government funding going into research in Canada. Equipment and facilities had been so degraded that we were working on third-class type infrastructure that could no longer compete. Canada had to make a decision to either be a player in the international game or not. A tremendous effort on the part of the AUCC, the Association of Community of Universities and Colleges in Canada, along with university presidents, worked very hard to show the government and demonstrate the need for research infrastructure across Canada. And so that need was understood by the policies that were being developed on a national level, and hence the CFI was created.
How does this fit into Canada's innovation strategy?
Actually, the science and technology strategy given by the federal government shows tremendous alignment with what we're doing. That strategy focuses on four key principles, one of focus. The CFI's mandate is tremendously focused on one area, is research infrastructure and doing it well. It is a second principle there is around excellence. The CFI funds research infrastructure based on excellence, international peer or merit review. And so excellence drives everything. It is also one that is based on partnership, and the CFI infrastructure forces partnership just by the mere fact that we provide 40% funding and the institution needs to find other partners, and then accountability. And given that we have taxpayers' dollars at work, we take that very seriously and work very hard on being accountable. So in that way. The other way is there are four key priority areas identified by the government in natural resources, environment, life sciences, and ICT. Information communication technologies, and I would say that 80 to 85% of CFI funding falls directly within those areas of priority, so we are very aligned in how we move forward.
When you look at what you've accomplished over the last 10 years, what are the gaps that you see now?
Interesting that you ask, because there are gaps. I think that probably one that is getting some attention and needs continued attention is the pressures on operating costs related to large infrastructure. Another one is Canada has embraced some national treasures in terms of big science, and finding a way to sustain big science in Canada is a tremendous pressure. I think that the other thing that we've been finding as we move forward is moving away from individual projects to platforms, and I guess the HPC, the WestGrid, is one example of moving to platform technologies. That's a new emerging area. And then sustaining that which we've already done, because as you might imagine, leading-edge infrastructure only remains leading-edge for a very limited lifetime. So our programs need to not only allow for new initiatives, but to sustain that which we've done. So finding a balance in the system. And I guess the other big challenge is, again, we're not alone. There is need for salary, indirect costs, all those kinds of things. And so that the balance of funding in the innovation system needs to be maintained. You can't overfund one and underfund the other. So finding that medium. And now that we are at a capacity where we're really now empowered to do great things, balance, I think, is the next big challenge.
Is Canada a player, though, now?
Actually, there was an interesting article in The Economist about a year ago that said, when it comes to science, Canada matters. And I think that we can be proud to say that we are a player on the international scene.
Thank you very much, Suzanne.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.
That was Suzanne Corbet, Vice President of External Relations and Communications with the Canada Foundation for Innovation. Three young researchers from the University of Calgary gave their thanks to the Canada Foundation for Innovation at a recent 10th anniversary celebration for the agency. These researchers are working in the fields of medicine, oil sands production, and bioinformatics. And they all say they benefited from the equipment and lab resources provided by the Canada Foundation for Innovation. I spoke first with John Kelly.
My current area of research involves investigating the relationship between neural stem cells and brain tumor stem cells in the laboratory of Dr. Samuel Weiss. I was previously involved in intraoperative imaging with Dr. Garnet Sutherland.
What role has the Canadian Foundation for Innovation played in the work that you're doing?
The CFI provided support which allowed the creation of the Interoperative Magnetic Resonance Imaging Project, which I was initially involved with during the first few years of my residency, investigating the impact of that technology on neurosurgical procedures.
What exactly would it do?
The intraoperative MR system is used to provide imaging before, during, and after neurosurgery. This allows us to optimize surgical procedures for patients and to increase the safety of our surgical procedures.
And you've been involved in another project. It has something to do with an operating arm. What's the exact name of that?
The second CFI-funded project, spearheaded by Dr. Garnet Sutherland, is called NeuroArm. This is the first neurosurgical robotic system in the world. It's magnetic resonance imaging compatible, and it aims to bring robotics to neurosurgery.
How is that going to help people?
This will help people, again, by improving the safety and accuracy of neurosurgical procedures. In addition, it will allow surgeons to work through more narrow, defined surgical corridors, again, improving the technology for neurosurgery and ultimately the safety and the ease that neurosurgical procedures can be performed.
With your research, what's your ultimate goal?
Currently, I'm looking at neural stem cells and their relationship to brain tumors, and trying to understand what cells give rise to brain tumors, with the hope that identifying these cells will then lead to targeted treatments and better outcomes for patients with brain tumors.
Thank you very much, John.
My pleasure.
My name is Norca Marcano. I'm a geochemist from the Central University of Venezuela. I'm doing a PhD in geology in the Department of Geosciences, working with the ASAIS, and I'm working with the characterization of bitumen for looking for chemical proxies for monitoring the in-situ operating of the Alberta oil sands.
How do you actually do that?
Well, we, in the PRG group, Petroleum Reservoir Group, have the facilities to do molecular analysis. And I'm also part of the Applied Geochemistry group, which has the facility to do a stable isotopic analysis. And with these two techniques, I'm characterizing the bitumen and looking for any change produced during the operating processes that are going to be applied to the bitumen. So that's the way I work.
How would that be any different than the way things are done now in order to mine the oil sands? How will your work help?
In general, the ASAIS is looking for enhancing the operating of the Alberta oil sands. And this is going to be better for the environment, first of all, because it's going to be with less environmental effect. And also because we are looking for any techniques that is less energy and water, with less energy and water consumption. And well, in general, we are looking for increase the recovery with less energy consumption.
Well, my understanding too is one of the exciting developments could be, if it all comes to fruition, is you would be able to get the bitumen out without actually having to dig a big hole in the ground.
Yeah, without mining. Yeah, exactly. We are looking for enhancing the upgrading inside the reservoir, which is called in-situ upgrading, so the bitumen can be extracted without mining, just because of regular extraction of that from the subsurface. Yeah.
Now, you were here speaking today at the 10th anniversary for the Canadian Foundation for Innovation. What role has the CFI played in your research and your ability to be here?
Oh, I think it's a big role. Yeah, because I'm working now with the ASAIC. I'm founding through the ASAIC. And all the equipments I'm working with now, and the facilities and the laboratories were renovated with the help of the ASAIC, funded by the ASAIC. So everything I'm using and all the edge technology we are applying is thanks to the grants received from the CFI.
Thank you very much, Norca.
Thank you very much.
My name is David Foster. I'm a PhD student in physics and a researcher here at the IBI.
So, David, tell me a little bit about the research that you're doing.
What I'm working on are developing models of the genetic regulatory network in cells. And so inside a cell, you have a copy of your DNA, which contains segments called genes. And these genes are then, by the machinery inside the cell, translated into mRNA, which is then translated into protein. And these proteins are responsible for doing basically everything inside your body. I mean, gene expression causes memory formation in your brain. It can make your pancreas produce insulin. And, as we've talked about here today, it can, when it doesn't do quite what it's supposed to, it can give you cancer. And so the real trick of the whole thing is that that genes actually and their products are responsible for regulating each other. So the whole cell is actually a huge sort of dynamical system with all of these interacting components. And so what I'm trying to do is understand it is a small part of that, so we can try to, specifically, I'm working on modeling the part of that circuitry which is responsible for the differentiation of blood cells in the hematopoietic lineage. And so by trying to understand this special case, we're trying to get some kind of an idea how gene regulation actually happens inside the cell.
Now, you also have an internship in the United States. Tell me about that. Who's that with?
I'm working through the MITACS program. I'm working with IBM, and they have a pure research group at the Watson Research Center. And so I'm working with a gentleman named Gustavo Stolovitsky, who is who's really one of the best minds in the field of bioinformatics in general, but in specifically genetic network inference. And so what he's working on is taking experimental observables, things you can find out in the lab, and then taking that very convoluted, in some sense, data and working out what that actually means in terms of the underlying connections that control the functioning of the cell.
Now, you came here especially today from New York so that you could be part of this celebration for the 10th anniversary of the Canadian Foundation for Innovation. What part did CFI play in your research?
Well, CFI was responsible for, like I said, this whole laboratory, and especially a lot of the high-throughput portions of it, like this great machine we have, the million-dollar robot that can do all of these brilliant experiments. And what that really allows, all of these experimental machines are vital for producing the data and getting sort of fast access to experimental truth, in some sense, that it lets us validate our theoretical ideas, and similarly, our theoretical ideas can then help drive and direct experimental research. And so the CFI, by providing us with this really state-of-the-art arena for experiment, has really made my theoretical work possible.
Thank you very much, David.
Thank you.
I was speaking with PhD candidates at the University of Calgary, David Foster, Norca Marcano, and John Kelly. The 10th anniversary event for the Canada Foundation for Innovation was held at the lab of Dr. Stuart Kaufman. Stuart is the founding director of the Institute for Biocomplexity and Informatics at the University of Calgary. The IBI was established 2.5 years ago with funding from ICOR, the Informatics Circle for Research Excellence, and the Canada Foundation for Innovation helped Stuart secure the robot his lab uses.
Since the Human Genome Project, we know the roughly 25,000 genes in a human cell, and therefore it's a little bit like knowing all the parts of a car spread out on the ground in front of you, but we don't know how to put the parts together to make a functioning car. Systems biology, roughly speaking, is, okay, now that we know the parts, how do they all go together to make a working cell and to make a working organism, or make a sick organism that we can fix? So that's what this institute's about, or at least it's one of the things the institute's about. Where we are from 2.5 years ago is we are, as of about 2 weeks ago, almost up to full force. We have made essentially 4 additional faculty appointments. We have one more to go. The laboratory that I was starting to construct took a long time to construct. It took about 2 years or 2.5 years to get constructed, but it's now functioning. From the Canadian Foundation for Innovation, whose 10th anniversary we're celebrating today, we received about $1 million, part of which went to the purchase of a very sophisticated robot with additional funds from Alberta itself. And what the robot allows us to do is very many experiments in parallel. So specifically what we're trying to do is the following. All of your listeners will know about cancer, of course. In the last 5 years, it's become clear that cancers typically have a subset of cells, maybe 1% of the tumor population, that are stem cells, cancer stem cells. While many of the cells in the cancer may not be able to divide, that's not always true, but it's often true, cancer stem cells continue to divide and are thought now to drive cancer growth. What we're trying to do is to screen thousands to maybe hundreds of thousands of drug candidates to try to find a drug that will cause a cancer stem cell to change or differentiate into either a normal cell or, in any case, a non-dividing cell. If we can find such therapies, which is called differentiation therapy, and actually works in the case of acute myelogenous leukemia, where if you treat with vitamin A, you cause the cancer cells to differentiate. If we can get this to work, it does, in fact, promise a breakthrough in cancer treatment.
What progress have you made so far on that?
So our laboratory has been functioning for 6 months. Experiments take a long time. They take a long time even when you allow for the fact that they take a long time. Where we are now is that we are completing the preliminary experiments that we need to do so we can get on to the actual screening. Those preliminary experiments consist in things such as actually growing cells and getting them to grow well. Then what we're doing is we're using a particular kind of molecule called short interfering RNA, and it has the property that it can shut off a gene. The way it does so is that genes make RNA molecules, and RNA molecules are translated into protein molecules, and this short interfering RNA blocks the step to translation of a specific gene. So what we're doing now is confirming that we can shut off the translation of a specific gene by degrading its RNA using the short interfering RNA. It's working like a charm. So we've now done that. We're taking our first steps to try to use the capacity to perturb the activity of a gene of our choice to try to get almost cancer stem cells, cancer cell lines, to differentiate into normal cells.
Now, is there a lot of competition from researchers like yourself in other countries?
There was not competition 2.5 years ago. We were easily on the or ahead of the leading edge. Because it took, unfortunately, 2 years to get the lab going, I would say that we are now in the early stage of the emergence of this idea of differentiation therapy becoming not well recognized, but recognized. So there's going to be growing competition in the next 5 to 10 years worldwide. That's actually good. That is to say, it's good from the point of view of finding treatments for cancer because we want hundreds of labs doing it. On the other hand, we're interested in Alberta in trying to drive economic growth in Alberta, and therefore we have to compete successfully, rapidly, with our international colleagues so that we can be in the race to find molecules that cause cancer stem cells to differentiate, then tie that in with computational biology. Alberta, as all the listeners in Alberta know, is a very non-diversified economy. And its economic well-being in the long run is going to depend highly on diversifying the economy while it has the oil wealth that it has. And systems biology and related health benefits from it, pharmaceuticals, companies, biotech companies, instrumentation companies, and so on, need to grow in Alberta to create the kind of economic diversification we need to capitalize on the opportunity that we've got.
Well, we know what we need, and we know where we'd like to be. How are we going to get there?
I'm glad that you've asked me that. I have been thinking for the 2.5 years since I've been a Yank come up to Alberta, but I'm now a permanent resident as of 4 days ago, and I'm very pleased about it. I've been thinking, and I am thrilled to find out from Mel Wong, who is at the Ministry of Advanced Education and Technology and Innovation, of the following. Part of what Canada lacks that the United States has is a venture capital community. And part of what it lacks is an enormous pool of managerial skills to create the companies that we need. So I've been thinking for 2.5 years that Alberta needs to create some kind of venture capital fund, partially with private money and partially with Alberta Wealth, professionally managed, but with enough money to bet on 30 or 40 companies, not one or two, because only 1 in 8 companies succeeds. So you have to have enough money to bet on enough bets so that, in fact, you'll have a few winners. And then we have to bet on clusters of companies that are mutual complements, an example of which is the channel changer for television. There was just no point in inventing a channel changer in 1910 when there wasn't any televisions and no television stations and multiple channels. So the economy creates niches for new economic goods to enter the economy. And basically, the more diverse the economy is, the faster it's creating niches for new goods and services to enter the economy. I'm writing a paper on this right now for Scientific American called The Evolution of Future Wealth. And most economists aren't thinking about this. Alberta, with its narrow economic range, needs desperately to think about this so that it can grow in a sustainable way in the coming decades.
Thank you very much, Stuart.
Thank you.
That was Stuart Kaufman, director of the Institute for Biocomplexity and Informatics at the University of Calgary. This is supported by iCorps, with some help from the Canada Foundation for Innovation. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our e-newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by iCorps, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, Alberta Ingenuity, the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, Genome Alberta, the Alberta Conservation Association, the University of Lethbridge, Alberta Research Council, and the NSERC Industrial Chair in Integrated Landscape Management. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.